Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999. The Division of America.
Hello. An interesting thing is happening in America. The country is moving in two directions at the same time. On the one hand, there's the Clinton coalition, moving ever more boldly into the feel-good realm of greater and greater permissiveness, of homosexuality, of feminine values and attitudes, of multiculturalism and diversity. This is the part of America which cheered the bombing of Serbia, and which supports the concept of a new world order, telling everyone everywhere how to run his life. This is the part of America which is looking forward happily to the continued darkening of America, the part that believes things will be much better when there no longer is a white majority. This is the part of America which believes in equality and democracy and brotherhood. It is the trendy, fashionable, materialistic, consumption-oriented part of America, the narcissistic and individualist part, the me generation of all ages. And on the other hand, there's the rest of white America. It's the part of white America that not only didn't vote for Clinton and doesn't approve of the way he's running the country, but which is appalled, which is horrified that such a person could have become their president. It is the part of white America which has not accepted that America should be a policeman for the world, waging war on countries whose internal policies the New World Order trendies don't like. It's the part of white America which has not accepted the notion that homosexuality is okay, that same-sex marriages are okay, that homosexuals should be able to adopt children and raise them in accord with their own perversity. It's the part of white America which does not believe in sending women into combat or in keeping our borders open to the third world. It's the part of white America which does not believe that it's more important to have more diversity and multiculturalism in our schools than it is to maintain rigorous performance standards. It's the part of white America which has resisted the notion that everything white, male, and heterosexual is suspect. The part which is beginning to become a little cynical about the use of the word hate by the controlled media to label everything which is not politically correct. Now, this part of America isn't moving as a whole anywhere. Most of the people in this part of America are in a state of culture shock. They're still trying to figure out what happened to the America they used to know and love. To the extent that this part of America is going anywhere, it is supplying a growing trickle of recruits to a resistance movement, which is in part an underground army and in part a forum for dissidents. This growing separation of two parts of America may not look the same from everyone's point of view, and to some it may not be apparent at all. What I see, however, is two simultaneous movements away from the center, away from the old status quo. I see on the one hand the part which, for the sake of simplicity, I'll just call the Clinton Coalition. And please understand that I'm using the terms Clinton Coalition and Clintonistas in a generic sense now, not just to refer to the current gang, but also to their predecessors of the same ilk. I see the Clinton Coalition becoming ever more outrageous, ever more arrogant and audacious, ever more self-confident and unrestrained. And on the other hand, I see the accelerating growth of the organization I head, the National Alliance, and I see a growing response to these American Dissident Voices broadcasts. Now, the way I've described this phenomenon, in a sense, I've cast myself and the part of America to which I belong in the role of reactionaries. The Clinton coalition has been pushing policies we don't like, and we have reacted to them. I guess I'd rather be able to think of myself as a revolutionary than as a reactionary. But the truth of the matter is that if the Clinton gang hadn't been pushing policies 30 years ago, which I saw as policies which would destroy my race and the civilization we built, I would have remained a physics professor. I became a dissident. I became an activist in reaction to these destructive policies which were being promoted by the Clinton gang back in the 1960s. They were the revolutionaries. I was the reactionary. Having become a dissident, however, I eventually went quite far beyond merely resisting the policies of the Clinton gang. I thought about the underlying flaws in our society and in our system of government and in our prevailing ideology and lifestyle, which had allowed the Clinton gang to get into a position where it could do us so much damage. Instead of defending the center, I became a revolutionary myself, determined that we must not only defeat the Clintonistas and take power away from them, but that we must restructure our society, restructure our government, restructure our way of thinking and of living so that the enemies of our people could not gain power over us again. So while the Clinton gang continued to move away from the center in one direction, I began moving away from the center in another direction. And now many more people than in previous years also have stopped merely trying to defend the center and are moving away from it with me. Many more people have stopped being reactionaries and are becoming revolutionaries instead. This is the phenomenon which I want to talk about today, this accelerating moving away from the center, this accelerating separation of two parts of America. There are many different viewpoints from which one can look at this phenomenon. Let me describe for you a film I saw last week, which casts light on it from one viewpoint. The film was made in 1995, but it took me 4 years to get around to seeing it. It's called Pure Race, and it's a more or less standard hate propaganda film of the sort Hollywood has been churning out for the past 15 years or so in an effort to persuade the couch potatoes that anyone who doesn't have politically correct ideas on racial matters is a dangerous psychopath. It steals a number of ideas from other propaganda films in the same genre, such as Betrayal and Into the Heartland, both of which came out a few years ago. In fact, Pure Race is chock full of the standard liberal cliches. The film looks at America from the Clintonista viewpoint, and what it says, essentially, is that you can't trust anyone who isn't a politically correct urban liberal. White people in small towns and rural areas are likely to be dangerous racist thugs. The two co-protagonists in the film, a white university student and a black university student, are driving together through the Pacific Northwest, heading back to school. And they have a flat tire in rural Idaho, where blacks are not welcome. The two are kidnapped by a neo-Nazi gang, the leader of which is the mayor of the nearest town, and a prominent member of which is a local sheriff's deputy. And they are turned loose in the woods to be hunted down and killed by the heavily armed neo-Nazis for sport. Well, that's part of what the film Pure Race says. It also tells viewers that blacks really are superior to whites in every way, especially in their attractiveness to pretty white girls, and that we certainly shouldn't be resentful about that. One young white man who objects to the black co-protagonist making a pass at his girlfriend gets a well-deserved beating from the black. The white co-protagonist of the liberal wimp variety slavishly admires the black both for his successful pass at the white girl and for beating up her white boyfriend. Now, the Jews and their allies make films like Pure Race because the films serve their purpose. They do make politically correct urban liberal viewers suspicious of white people who live in small towns in places like Idaho or West Virginia. They do convince white university students of the liberal wimp variety that it's okay for blacks to date white girls and that anyone who objects ought to get beaten up. If the films didn't serve this purpose, the Jews wouldn't keep making them. My reaction to the film was that one of the first things to be done when America is restored to health is to hunt down everyone who ever has had anything to do with making one of these anti-white hate propaganda films and deal with him appropriately. And I know that a great many other white Americans would at the very least be angered by this film. The portrayals in these Jewish hate propaganda films aimed at the urban couch potatoes are starker than they used to be a few years ago. The propaganda is more blatant. The films are less subtle. And that's because the gap between the two Americas is widening. The films don't have to be as subtle as they used to be in order to be effective with their intended audience. Well, that's one viewpoint. Last night, I saw another hate propaganda film, a much, much more subtle propaganda film than Pure Race. The film I saw last night was a fairly new one. The name was American History X. When this film first appeared a few months ago, there was quite a bit of soul-searching and hand-wringing among the Jews and their allies. Many of them thought that it was too subtle, that it might send the wrong message to many viewers. They were afraid that by pretending to be objective, by pretending to be even-handed in its portrayal of whites and blacks, it might confirm some whites in their prejudices. Well, in case you haven't seen the film yet, I'll describe it for you. The protagonist in American History X is a skinhead in a working-class family in California, a bright and articulate skinhead named Derek, who is a natural leader. Derek's father is a fireman who is murdered by blacks while trying to put out a fire in a crack house in a black neighborhood. And I must say for this film that it does a better job than any other film I have seen recently of portraying the grim realities of life for young people growing up in the multicultural cesspool that the Clintonistas have made of California. Anyway, the black gangs and the intimidation of white kids by blacks in the schools are portrayed with stark realism in American History X. Watching the film helps one understand why many white kids from working class families who are forced to attend the multiculturalized schools in our cities become skinheads. They do it in order to survive. The white kids have been abandoned by the adult establishment, which in order to be politically correct must pretend that going to school with blacks is a wonderful, culturally enriching experience. So the white kids join skinhead gangs so that they can protect themselves from the blacks. Early in the film, a gang of armed blacks come by Derek's house at night to steal his truck from his driveway. Derek surprises them and engages in a shootout with them, which leaves two of the blacks dead. Derek is sent off to prison for 3 years under the theory that he used excessive force in preventing the theft of his truck. While in prison, he finds protection from the black prison gangs by hanging out with a white gang. But when Derek criticizes the white gang's drug dealing, he is savagely brutalized and raped by them to teach him a lesson. After that, without the protection of his fellow whites, he is afraid that the black gangs will kill him. but a black prisoner he has been assigned to work with in the prison laundry saves his life by putting out the word to the other blacks that Derek is not to be hurt. To make a long story short, when Derek finishes his 3 years in prison, he is a changed man. He has learned from his experience in prison that not all of his fellow whites are good and not all blacks are bad. Not all of them are against him. He is determined to get his younger brother, whom he loves dearly, out of the skinhead scene. But it's too late. His younger brother has made the mistake earlier of standing up to a black thug who was stomping a smaller white boy in the school bathroom. And at the end of the film, the black thug comes back to school with a pistol and murders Derek's brother. So the message of American History X is not that blacks are superior and politically incorrect whites are psychopathic thugs, which is the message of pure race. The message of American History X is that some whites are bad and some blacks are good. That it's not simply a matter of good whites and bad blacks. We see the effect of this message on Derek. It confuses him to the point that he decides to opt out of the very real war going on between blacks and whites. He fought in the war and it cost him dearly. He won't fight any longer. He just wants his own family to be safe. He wouldn't have gone to prison and his brother would still be alive if they hadn't resisted. The message of American History X is that we should not resist. And undoubtedly, in this feminized society in which we live today, that message will be effective with some people. What the hate propagandists are telling us with American History X is, yes, it's a tough, dangerous world out there, but you mustn't try to resist it on the basis of race. Because, you see, there are some very bad white people, and there are some decent black people. So don't resist. It won't do any good. You'll just get hurt. Just let the process of multiculturalization continue. Just go with the flow and try to make the best of it. Don't resist. Well, well, well. As if we needed Hollywood to tell us that some white people are bad and some blacks are not. Now, for those who are not hopelessly confused by this revelation, like Derek was, and therefore are not inclined to throw up their hands and surrender, let me carry the message of American History X a step further than its producers intended. Yes, it's a war zone out there, and perhaps you will be more likely to be hurt if you don't surrender. But you know, America wasn't always such a multicultural cesspool. The schools in our cities weren't always infested with black gangs. Even places like Los Angeles used to be decent, safe, wholesome communities for white families to live. It used to be that white kids didn't get stomped by black thugs in the school bathrooms. It used to be that one didn't have to worry about blacks stealing one's truck from the driveway at night, not even in Los Angeles. In fact, there didn't even used to be white drug gangs like the one in the prison Derek was sent to. There didn't used to be such gangs before our society became the cesspool that it is today. I mean, there was a time when not even the mafia would deal in drugs because drug dealing was considered a dirty business. And the situation is getting worse. The non-whites are continuing to flood in. California is becoming darker and darker, a less and less tenable place for young whites to grow up. All of America is becoming darker. White people are losing ground everywhere, in our cities, in our suburbs, in our schools, in our armed forces. Non-white immigrants are continuing to pour into the country. The handouts and the favoritism toward non-whites continue. The governments in Washington and in every state house in the country and in the larger city halls are becoming more and more corrupt. Throughout our history, our ancestors responded to situations like this by fighting, the way Derek and his brother did in the beginning of the film American History X. We fought our way up from barbarism. We built a civilization. We established a system of justice for our people. We brought order out of chaos. And we fought every step of the way. We fought the Huns and the Moors and the Mongols and the Turks. We built a civilization in Europe in which we knew how to deal with white thugs like those who brutalized Derek in prison. We didn't pamper them or send a social worker out to talk to them. We hanged them. We got rid of them. We came to America and we fought the Indians. The white settlers here did not submit to the Indians' atrocities against our women and children. And we did not throw up our hands and surrender when we realized that some of the Indians were friendly, but not every Indian was in the habit of kidnapping white settlers and torturing them to death in horrible ways. We didn't quit when it dawned on us that we would have a hard fight ahead of us to civilize North America. We fought. We civilized the continent. We built a country where we could live and work, where we could go to school and raise our families in a decent and safe environment. No black gangs, no Asian gangs, no Hispanic gangs, no drugs, no drive-by shootings, no flood of non-whites pouring into the country, no Bill Clintons in the White House. It was our America. We fought for it, and we built it. And then, perhaps, we let down our guard. We relaxed too much. And so here we are in 1999, with our civilization under attack and losing ground on all fronts. The interesting thing about American History X is that the skinhead hero, Derek, understood and enunciated all of these things at the beginning of the film. He fought in the only way he knew how to fight in his environment and with his background. And that was right and good. Of course, we can't win this war with an army of drunken, undisciplined, carousing skinheads. But at least the message of the film, its moral, was good up to this point. But then the film revealed its true nature as a hate propaganda film when it had the hero discover that there are bad whites and good blacks and decide, therefore, that he no longer could fight for white civilization, that it was bad to resist those who are destroying America. And I guess that propaganda message will be effective with some people, but not as many, I believe, as the producers hoped. I believe that many viewers will go the next step without my having to explain it to them and will say to themselves, yes, life is not so simple, but the fact is that we are in a war and we are losing. Conditions are becoming worse, and it is not in our nature to surrender. The only way that we can have a better future for our people is to fight, not give up like Derek did. And that's the division of America that I see now. I see more people than before understanding that we must fight, even as others are persuaded to surrender. And I do hope that most of you in my audience today will understand that we must fight and will choose to fight with me for a better future. Thanks for being with me again today.